and welcome to the Big Happy Life podcast. It's been absolutely ages since the end of season two. Welcome back for season three if you were a previous listener, and welcome if you're new. I'm Natalie Britt. I'm the founder of Big Happy Life, where I am a coach, trainer, and hypnotherapist, helping people live with joy, productivity, and purpose, aka living the Big Happy Life. My work comes out of my own experience of being a parent and a business owner, and the things I share on this podcast are really often reflections of the things I have learned, continue to learn, sometimes still need to learn. And this episode is probably a mixture of all three of those things, and it's inspired by that kind of desire that I had to be a particular type of mom prior to my children arriving, and then kind of realizing what that actually took. Because what I came to realize was that for my children to have the experience of life that I hoped they would have, I needed to change a few things in myself. So I've chosen the title of this episode really carefully, Live the Life You Tell Your Kids Is Possible, because a little part of me thinks, A, we need to think about what we want for our kids and what we think it means, and then trace that back to think about what we need to teach them through our own example so they have the potential to have those lives. And that's really what this episode is about. So let's dive in. So when we think about the anything is possible life for our kids, we think about the things that they might do. You know, maybe they're going to be astronauts, lawyers, doctors, entrepreneurs, dancers, actors, footballers, artists. We see in them the desire, the aptitude, the skill for some of these things. We see them have an interest in things and we think, oh yeah, you know, this could be something. He could make something of this. She could do something with that. It would be awesome. But at the same time, we also don't want to be pushy and we want them to be happy. So we say, well, it doesn't really matter what they do. As long as they're happy, we're happy. But then when we think about emotional health and the ability to experience joy and happiness, if they follow us as their blueprint, would they get there? In my case, the answer was no. When my kids first came, I had already been in the adoption process for 3 years by that point. Training course after training course, learning about the way I needed to be in order to be a therapeutic parent, to be somebody who would create space where my children could heal from the past, could connect with themselves, and could integrate into the world in a way that helped them feel loved, capable, confident, balanced, well-rounded people who could go into the world and achieve anything. And I was like, yes, I can do that. I was told all this stuff about trauma and the effects of trauma on the brain. And I was like, nope, that's not going to stop me. I am going to help my kids have it all. People would often say, oh, you know, you're so amazing. This is such an amazing thing you're doing. But the truth is, it was totally selfish. It was all about me and trying to prove my worth, trying to put my stake in the ground as saying my life mattered. And when the kids came and I was faced with my inability to be the mom I had imagined prior to their arrival, I crumbled. There's no other word for it. My whole identity sort of folded in on itself. And I was like, I'm nothing like I thought I was going to be. I'm not even close to the person I imagined. For a long while, that led me down a road of depression, isolation, not even really fully being able to communicate what I was experiencing to my husband. I felt so ashamed of not being naturally gifted in the role that is probably the most natural one for a woman to play, and that's the one of mom. But all the while, I knew my children were the biggest gift I had ever had in my life. And so it took a long time, but eventually it became a thing of, well, you're going to have to get up. Like, you have to become her. You have to do something that makes you the mom they deserve, because otherwise you saddled them with you and you're going to take them down with you, and that's not okay because they deserve better. And so the whole living this anything is possible life, in order for my children to have it, I realized I needed to be the mom who could help them create it. And that kind of meant figuring it out for myself. And so that's the vantage point I'm taking here. The vantage point that says you can do and be and have anything, but no matter what kind of life you create, it's not going to be pain-free, it's not going to be straightforward or stress-free, and the habits and thoughts and feelings that you cultivate will determine what life is like, regardless of the job you do, the amount of money you have, the person you marry, the number of kids you have. And so the thing that I have come to realize is living the life we tell our kids is possible is really about living the internal life, living the thoughts, feelings, and habits that make whatever version of life we create for ourselves feel joyful, purposeful, and allow us to be productive within it. So there are lots of things we need to create that kind of life, but the ones I'm focusing on in this episode are the ones that I think if we make habits of them, we become role models for our kids, so that if they make habits of them, they stand a much better chance of living the kind of lives that we envisage for them, the kinds of lives where they feel happy and have a sense of belonging and purpose and meaning and joy. So there are five things that I think, when cultivated, help us live whatever version of our anything is possible life in such a way that it feels good to us. And those five things are presence, reflection, disruption, acceptance, and energy. And I'll talk about each one of those individually and give some examples of what that would actually mean in practice and why I think it's important for our children to learn those things as early as possible. I'm not going through them in any particular order because I kind of see them as parts of a circle or a circuit, that when you want the big happy life, if you break any one of these circuits, that life is harder to come by. Or you can build a lot of elements to it, but you can end up feeling quite trapped by the big life, just feeling pulled in a million directions because there's too much going on, it's too stressful, and you're finding it hard to manage all of that. So these five things are about creating a life that, yes, may be very demanding and potentially quite stressful at points, but by doing these five things or focusing on these five things would create a life where you feel good living it and you're able to get through the stresses in really quite resourceful ways. I'm saying you, but me, us, we. And if we do these things, the hope is that we create blueprints that our children can use to do the same. Okay, so the first one is presence. And that's really about learning the skill of being present in the moment. One of the things I find with my clients, and I find it with myself as well, is that very often we stress ourselves out and lose perspective and lose the capacity for joy in the moment because our attention is somewhere in the past or somewhere in the future. Now, jumping to the past and the future can be really helpful when the energy that we bring back from those jumps is useful to us. So, you know, going back and remembering something that made you feel really confident and alive and self-assured is going to power you in this moment to do whatever it is that you're facing in a more confident way. But going backwards and replaying mistakes or things that went wrong can be really disempowering in the moment. But then sometimes we don't have control over that. So part of what we have to look at is if we continue to jump to the past or continue to have the past play in our minds in ways that stop us making progress, then therapy, coaching, some kind of support intervention may be necessary to help reduce the effect of the past on the present. But where it's something that you can consciously do, the idea is to bring your attention and your energy back to the present moment. This is true even in little things as well. Like, I used to find this with my children, where my mind would jump past or future, because of little things that maybe my son would do. I mean, I talk about it all the time on earlier podcast episodes where he wouldn't brush his teeth or he wouldn't put his shoes on. And instead of reacting to the single event, I would be reacting to the 25 previous days that we had had the same argument. And so my reaction to that was massive for something simple like not putting his shoes on. Whereas if I could just deal with just this incident, just this moment, and handle it, the object of the exercise is to get him to put his shoes on. It doesn't have to be some kind of massive catastrophe where I'm imagining, you know, he's going to be 18 and I'm still going to be putting his bloody shoes on. Which, you know, when you think about the reaction to this has been happening for months and it's going to keep happening for years, it's a much bigger reaction. It's far more stressful. And the hangover of that stress going into the workday isn't ideal. So in terms of living this anything is possible life, normally these lives come with a lot of stress and a lot of demands. And so the ability to simply hold our attention in the present is part of what helps us to maintain perspective and also not to excessively stress ourselves out about things that are not actually happening right now or are not the massive deal that we're turning them into. The skills and habits that help to embed this are things like meditation and mindfulness practices. And those are the kinds of things that we want to do on a daily basis to learn the skill of quieting the mind and directing the mind to a particular point. Usually with meditation and mindfulness, it's something like breath or a mantra or something like that. But the object of the exercise is that you learn the skill of commanding your attention and bringing it back to a particular point. And we don't necessarily have to actively teach our kids meditation and mindfulness practices or have them involved in those things unless they particularly want to be. The benefit of our ability to remain present will be felt by them. And presence will involve us being where we actually are. So if we're watching TV, we're watching TV. If we're having dinner, we're having dinner. We're not having dinner and on our phones or watching TV and working or doing something where we're physically present, but mentally we've gone somewhere else. Because that division of attention and that division of energy is so taxing and so stressful that it's a very, very easy way to burn ourselves out, even when the demands on us aren't actually that heavy. So that's number one. There's a lot more to say about that, but this is kind of a whistle-stop tour of some of the key skills that allow us to create the inner world that we need in order to have the outer world success that we're looking for. So the second one is reflection. And reflection is all about taking time to stop and understand ourselves and our motivations and the forces that drive us in particular directions. Reflection isn't always that simple to do on your own. Now, you can just, you know, get a journal, start writing, even record voice notes to yourself, make videos, do whatever allows you to connect with what you're feeling and what's going on in your body and mind. And speaking or writing is a great way to access some of the unconscious patterns that you may not yet be consciously aware of. So being able to surface those is useful. But when you do this sort of work with a coach or a therapist, that person is likely to ask you really quite powerful questions that are going to direct your reflection and channel your reflection in ways that might give you information you weren't able to access on your own. Either way, when you do this work, the idea is that you get a sense of what makes you tick so that over time you can learn how to make yourself more resourceful, how to rise in the face of challenge, how to access the strength and the power that you hold within yourself when things are difficult, which they invariably are in the anything is possible life. The other thing is having a chance to reflect helps you to think about the things you really want and the things that matter to you. Because the other thing about a really big life is that it has multiple opportunity costs built into it. And an opportunity cost is the thing you have to give up in order to take the opportunity. So if I say, you know, I want to make my business the world's biggest coaching business and I want to, you know, help millions of people, well, that could be a fantastic goal, but it will come at a cost. There will be things I will have to give up. Now, what a lot of us do with the whole big happy life idea is we tell ourselves it doesn't matter, we can have it all. We'll figure it out. We're just going to gun for the big thing and we'll figure it out. But it's not an ideal way to do things, because ultimately it puts us in a situation where we can potentially have lots of things, but it leaves us feeling like we're not doing any of them particularly well. Feeling guilty when we're with our kids because we're thinking about work, feeling distracted at work because we're thinking about our kids, and feeling like we're failing all over the place, no matter how hard we work or no matter how much we try and do. So having a practice of reflection and thinking about what really matters to us can help us make sure that the time we have is spent on things that really do matter. Reflection can also help us think about why the things we say matter, matter. For example, if we're chasing particular goals, but ultimately feeling really stressed and unrewarded by them, a practice of reflection can help us think about how we became so attached to those goals and whether or not it's time to revisit. Do we want those things? Are they that important to us? Would we happily give them up to feel different? A lot of the times my clients find that the things that they've been pushing themselves for are things that perhaps their parents wanted or their spouses wanted, or somewhere along the line it's been the dream or the goal of somebody else who was important to them, and they have taken it on as though it's their own. And part of what's making it so challenging is that they feel like they're not good enough if they don't achieve it, but a part of them doesn't really want to do it. And so that conflict of I have to, but I don't want to, creates such an enormous amount of stress and holds them back in so many ways that actually it's really difficult to achieve the goal anyway. So a practice of self-reflection just really helps us understand ourselves better and keep ourselves on track towards things that truly give us joy and meaning. But then reflection is also useful for the next thing. Number three is disruption. One of the things that takes us off track very often is ourselves. Self-doubt, limiting beliefs, past experiences, fears, all kinds of thoughts and feelings that have sparked little rules that we live by that we don't even know we live by. And so disruption comes out of reflection. When we find patterns in ourselves that are holding us back, things we're like, I really want to do this, I'm going for it. And then we get two steps down the road and we quit. Or we start telling ourselves, oh, we didn't want it in the first place, or I'm not good enough, or whatever the thing is. Whether we are consciously aware of it or not, if there's a thing that you want to achieve and that you've been gunning at for a long time, but you keep failing at it, or you keep turning back, or you keep having setbacks, what you are experiencing is some kind of unconscious pattern that is stopping you. And disrupting that pattern will get you moving forward. So learning the skill to disrupt the patterns is really helpful to get you unstuck and moving towards the things you want. That again is much easier done with a therapist or a coach or other trained professional who can help find the thing in your unconscious mind and help you identify it, name it, see it, and work beyond it. Release it, let it go, or move around it, depending on what it is. That is the type of work that I do, so if you need help with that, you can book a call with me via the website, bighappylife.co.uk, or email me directly, natalie@bighappylife.co.uk. The next useful skill to develop is one of acceptance. And acceptance is about starting where we are, starting with what is. More often than not, lives that stress us out have an awful lot of shoulds and shouldn'ts in them. So instead of focusing our energy and attention on what is happening and how things are, we spend an awful lot of time thinking about, talking about, worrying about what should be happening, what shouldn't be happening, what would be happening if. And those kinds of thought processes are not only disempowering, they are also kind of energy sapping and stress inducing. So learning the practice of acceptance, and this kind of goes hand in hand with presence and focusing on the here and now, is about looking at what has happened, what is happening, and not concerning ourselves with what should be happening or what would have happened if. And then deciding, is this something I want to take action on? Is this something I need to let go of? Marshall Goldsmith wrote a book called Triggers, and he has a really useful tip in it. He calls it AWAT, which stands for Am I Willing at This Time? So based on the thing that's happening, you ask yourself, am I willing at this time to deal with it? And if not, what do I need to do to let it go? Because what we don't want is the bleeding of energy into the shoulds and the shouldn'ts and the what ifs. And again, this is such a powerful thing to show our children when we are able to face tough things or things we disagree with and either stand up and have our voices heard or accept that in this situation, I'm not the decision maker. It's not within my power to make the decision. And therefore, I need to accept the decision that's been made and make the best of it. So we're moving forward and here's how we're going to solve this problem. So acceptance is really about reducing our stress and maximizing the resourcefulness we feel able to access in the moment. And making a habit of thinking that way makes us far more resilient and allows us to save a lot more of our energy for the things that truly matter. Which brings me to the final one of our five, which is energy. For all of the stuff we want to achieve and all of the things that we have our dreams and our hearts set on, we need energy to accomplish them. Even if we don't go for the big anything is possible life, we just want to live quietly, peacefully, and enjoy everyday life. I mean, arguably that is still the big happy life, but to differentiate it from I'm gunning for everything and I want it all. Either way, we need energy. And certainly for my generation, no one was talking about energy. The only thing we measured as part of understanding our health was our weight. If you were fat, you were unhealthy. And if you were thin, you were healthy. And that was pretty much it. But now I understand if you want a life you genuinely feel joyful and purposeful in, and a life where you can be productive, and particularly a life where you are gunning for big things, you have to have energy. And that was one of the biggest things I had working against me when the final piece of my puzzle fell into place, which was my kids, is I didn't have enough energy to be the mom I wanted to be. And then I didn't have the mental resources to manage the fallout of my exhaustion. And so I turned on myself. And I wasn't reflecting and I wasn't accepting and I wasn't doing any of the other things I've spoken about so far. And that ultimately led me into the kind of stress that wrapped itself around my neck and strangled me and became depression. And in my case, the thing that kicked off my recovery was actually lifestyle habit changes. It wasn't reading the parenting books and developing more strategies and trying to get to grips with how to be a better therapeutic parent in the face of all of this stress. The thing that really, really turned it around was when I changed what I was eating and drinking, and that changed how I was sleeping, which changed what I felt like when I woke up, which changed how I entered the day, and gradually I developed enough energy to do the reflection and to find the resourcefulness in myself and to begin the healing work of managing my emotions and doing better. And so I finish on this one because I think it's the most important place to start, and therefore I want it to be the last thing you hear within this episode. For me, energy has three components. It has the source, the quality, and the amount. And what I've alluded to so far here is about the amount of energy. If your health is poor, your diet is poor, your exercise is low, the amount of energy you have will be less than optimal and will make everything else much more difficult to do. And so as part of living the lives we tell our kids is possible, one of the best things we can do for ourselves is up the amount of energy we have access to, which involves lifestyle changes. That is also part of the work that I do. So if you are unsure where to start, you can book a habit Kickstarter package with me, which is basically like an MOT. We'll go through everything, the things you eat, the things you drink, the way you feel, your sleep patterns, the things that stress you out, the whole lot. And from that, you'll get a program that will allow you to make some lifestyle changes that you can put into practice immediately. And that will give you more energy, more vitality, and allow you the space and time to think about some of the other things that I've mentioned in this podcast, if these are things that you would like to implement in your own life so that you can show your kids how to do the same. Also under the heading of energy are the other two parts that I mentioned, the source and the quality. And the source of energy is like, where is your energy coming from? Now, at this point, it becomes a little bit more esoteric because yes, the energy that powers you physically is coming from the things you eat and whether you're hydrated and all of that. But when you think about, you know, the energy to start your business and what's motivating you and what's powering you, if that energy is coming from a source of, I'm not good enough unless I do this, that energy carries with it quite a lot of stress and baggage and enormous weight if you fail, which generally when starting businesses, we have to fail multiple times before we get it right. So that energy can cost you really severely on the route to the big anything is possible life. And so one of the things we need to do for our kids is to help them access energy sources within themselves that are powered by something useful. And what helps us do that is all the previous practices that I mentioned, the reflection, the acceptance, the disruption, and the presence. All of those things together will help us create energy sources within ourselves that power us and motivate us in ways that are helpful and empowering, which is where the quality of energy comes in, because that's about how it feels to access your energy from that source. So as you think about the goals you have in place and the things you're pursuing, if you feel in conflict, if you feel like a part of you wants to do it, but a part of you doesn't, what that tells you is the source of your energy is coming from somewhere that's less than helpful or less than optimal, and that it's worth kind of examining that and aligning yourself with a more helpful energy source. And that way, what you'll start to feel is a sense of ease and flow that comes with your efforts. Even when things are hard, there's a part of you that's like, cool, I'm doing this. This is awesome. And you're powered and kind of G'd up by it. Not always. I mean, sometimes it does just suck. But a lot of the time, there is a little buzz that comes out of it. As the Navy says, embrace the suck. Like, it's easier to embrace the suck if the source of your energy is coming from something that's aligned with something that feels positive to you. So those are the five things that come together to make the pursuit of the big anything is possible life feel purposeful, joyful, and meaningful, and allow you to be as productive as possible within it. There's so much more to say about each one of the five. And if you do have questions, I would be more than happy to answer them. You can email your questions or comments to natalie@bighappylife.co.uk, or you can also comment on the show notes page, which you will find at bighappylife.co.uk. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do leave a review. It makes such a huge difference to listener numbers and the possibility of the podcast reaching a wider audience. And if you know somebody who would benefit from listening to this and would enjoy the episode, please do share and send it over to them. For now, though, that's it from me. Thanks for listening.